Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014, episode 10.31, the Week 14 Preview Show. We're heading for the home stretch now, people. Home stretch run, playoff time. Every game is important. Another 16 games back on the schedule. Got a big show today. Former Washington Redskins QB and Super Bowl MVP Mark Rippon joins me a little later on the show. We'll talk about Redskins, RG3 getting benched, and the Flag Football Festival he will be a part of in Pasadena later this month. Plus, Sky Sports News' very own Richard Graves joins me to discuss Johnny Football and the four games we differ on in Week 14. Plus, my personal MVP wide receiver Dave Schmidt joins me to talk about our role in Flag Fest 2014. And Peter Kingsburg gets to represent the fans this week. Lots to talk about, so let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right, so lots of stuff happening here. There are some things that I can't talk about just yet until we get a little bit closer to the event. But one thing that I am going to be a part of in the next few weeks is a huge Flag Football Festival, music and tournament festival in Pasadena, California. I'll be joined with some of the folks who will be a part of that Flag Football and Music Festival later on in the show. As I said, Mark Rippon, who will be one of the faces of this tournament, who will be benefiting the More Hope Foundation. We'll talk about that and my role and what will be. I'll kind of be the one of the announcers of the games that are going to be played live in Pasadena. That's going to be pretty cool. And he'll talk to me. I actually got a chance to talk to him a little bit about the Washington Redskins and what they're doing with Robert Griffin III and him being a Super Bowl MVP quarterback. He had a lot to say about that. Also, Richard Graves is going to come in. He had to apologize to the fans for his performance a few weeks ago when he went up against me. He's not going up against me this week. That falls on the shoulders of Peter Kinberg. We'll see how Peter does this week. Richard and I just want to talk about the four games that he and I differ on, see if he can do any better than he did over the last couple weeks. Right now, it's that time, people. It's that time of year in the NFL. Four games left. Lots of teams still in it. Now, unfortunately, for a few teams, you know, they're out of it. There is no more tomorrow for those teams. And I'll tell you which teams those are, that just basically they have nothing to play for if the season ended today. One of those teams being that was team we saw on Monday Night Football, the New York Football Jets. They have been officially eliminated. And let me give you the rest of the teams that have been eliminated from playoff contention. The Oakland Raiders, the New York Jets, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Carolina Panthers, they're still in the hunt because of the division they're in. But once again, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the New York Giants, the Washington Redskins, the Oakland Raiders, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, those teams have all been eliminated from the playoffs already. Everyone else mathematically is still alive, but I think for all intents and purposes, the Carolina Panthers are going to be pretty much out of it. I think the Rams are out of it as well, even though they're at 5-7. They're certainly not going to win enough games to win their division. And it's going to be tough to make the playoffs. They'd have to win out and need a whole bunch of other teams to lose. Over in the AFC, It's even crazier as there are 6 teams sitting at 7-5, and the Houston Texans right behind them at 6-6. All those teams got to keep winning. I think it's going to take 11 wins to get into the playoffs. 10-6 is probably not going to be good enough in the AFC. Heck, 10-6 may not even be good enough to get you into the playoffs in the NFC. So still a lot of good football left to be played. We're going to talk about those 16 games briefly. So let's just get to it, because I said there's lots going on. First of all, Peter Kinberg and I, very interesting. He and I only differ on two games. For the most part, we agree on how Week 14 is going to play out. So let's quickly talk about the two games that we disagree on. We'll start with the Pittsburgh Steelers playing the Cincinnati Bengals. I've got the Cincinnati Bengals winning that game, but Peter sees the Pittsburgh Steelers winning. Now, unfortunately, I sent Peter an email, and I've yet to hear back from Peter, so I don't know his thoughts on the game or why he's picking the Steelers. I don't know if he's a Steeler fan, but I'll tell you why I think the Cincinnati Bengals are going to win. They're at home. And over the last several years, the Cincinnati Bengals have pretty much owned this division. They know how to play Pittsburgh. They are not afraid of the Steelers anymore. And I think the Steelers showed their true side last week against the New Orleans Saints, a game that they should have won at home and instead allowed New Orleans to go up and down the field. I think Andy Dalton will find success. A.J. Green, I look for him to have a big game this week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's why I like Cincinnati. Plus, they're at home, and it's going to be a big game for them. Like I said, they know they need to keep winning because all those teams, including the Browns, are right on their tail. So I'll take Cincinnati to win at home, and Peter's got the Pittsburgh Steelers. The only other game that we differ upon, the New York Giants traveling to Tennessee to face the Tennessee Titans. I have Tennessee to get their third win and the New York Giants to lose. Now, Richard Graves and I will be talking a little bit more in depth about this football game because he and I disagree as well. He's got the Giants winning that football game. I've got Tennessee. I think the Tennessee Titans are still playing hard football, and the New York Giants last week pretty much showed that they are packing it in. So we'll talk a little bit more about that game. Peter, if you get this, please, before Sunday, reply back to the email and let me know which one of these two games you would like to make the challenge game, either the Giants beating Tennessee or the Steelers beating Cincinnati. You've got two road teams there. I've got both the home teams, so it's up to you to decide. The fans have lost three in a row and are now three games back in the challenge game, so you need to come good and come big to get that in the books. All right, otherwise I'll be destined to flip a coin and make a decision on which game will be the challenge game. Anybody out there, Derek Hanlon, I know that you're interested in the challenge game. Please feel free to drop me a line and let me know which game you'd like to be the challenge game of the two as well. All right, right now joining me, Super Bowl MVP, former quarterback of the Washington Redskins, Mark Rippon. What's up, Rip? How you doing?
Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, hanging out. I'm going to real quickly ask you, what's going on in Washington right now, Mark?
Well, I wish I had the answers. Washington State, a lot of cold weather. Washington, D.C., a lot of cold nights for the Redskins, as witnessed here in their 3-9 start, and struggling seems to even come up with a way to put a team out there that even exemplifies what football is all about lately.
Well, you're a quarterback, and so how do you feel that the organization has kind of treated Robert Griffin III and how they've kind of pulled him right now and benched him?
Well, you know, that is very evident is that Robert Griffin III is not the player he was when he came into the league. I mean, he's had one in his college, an ACL tear that was, has been repaired, and you can see that he recovered pretty much fully from that. But when you have a second ACL repair, elite athlete like Robert is, the things that he does, and the talent that he has. And one of those his skill set is his legs. And when you don't have the legs anymore, and you can see that every time he plays, he's not the guy that can get away and extend plays as he used to, or turn a sack into a 15-yard run. The things that we all saw the first year he was in the league.
He's definitely not the same guy.
No, there's no doubt he's not the same guy. So it's taken, because of that, it's taken away one of the things that he's, probably one of the best in the game at, and that was extending plays and making things happen. So he's had to resort now to kind of sitting in the pocket. When you talk to quarterbacks, you're only as good as the guys up front. And when you've got makeshift line and you got a lot of injuries and guys that aren't consistent across the line day in and day out, week in and week out, you're only as good as those guys are. So to have it's almost a double-edged sword. To have a quarterback that's not as good as he once was athletically, and have an offensive line that isn't consistent and hasn't played together for a long period of time, and is patching things up just to put a group out there. It's awfully difficult to be successful. I think, in the chance now the Redskins are looking at is kind of to give Robert a little breather, give him an opportunity to watch the game, learn the game. The physical tools that, he struggled with is struggling with now because of his inability to extend plays doesn't necessarily equate to what they're seeing and what the coaching staff is talking about. And that's just mentally not making the proper read, not making the proper decision. And that has, I think, more concern than the physical things. The physical things, obviously, we all know. I mean, it's documented that he's not the same guy. But the mental things, I think, is what they're concerned about, because this is a bright kid that, was doing all sorts of great things at line of scrimmage with checks and making plays, based on understanding the game. He's had three different offensive coordinators and different systems he's been in, so that's challenging in itself. And he's not doing the things that are equating him to be successful and the team to be successful and making the right read. So it's a combination of a lot of things.
It will be interesting to see what happens with the organization and the quarterback position there. So, Mark, we're talking today. You're coming on, talk to me about this flag football festival that's going to be happening in California that you'll be a part of.
Well, my good buddy Ed Blunt played with me at Washington State University, and has just been kind of a genius when it comes to putting tournaments and making football fun for guys that still have a passion for the game and want to get out there and play competitively. And Ed's put Flag Fest together this year, 2014. He's got plans to make this a national event, and combined with the Moore Hope Foundation, a great cause. One of our teammates at Washington State, Dee Dee Moore, a real close friend of Ed, lost his battle with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and they've honored Ed in a way that's helping families out, especially during the Christmas holidays. This tournament will benefit families that are less fortunate. Can't put a meal on the table, or don't have the necessities and even the food and clothing to continue going day in and day out. So this event will be twofold. One will be a great time for athletes to come out there and strut their stuff, bands and music. It's a music fest. I mean, it's a flag fest, but it'll be a music festival along with it. It'll be great fun for families to come down and watch, and also a great cause in the Moore Hope Foundation.
Well, you're making me want to polish off my cleats, Mark, and then get back on the football field.
Well, it actually makes me want to, but then I think of what I'm going to feel like the next morning, and then I think, well, maybe I'll let this really go to the athletes that can still do it, So, it does get you excited, and I think it really shows the passion people have for the game of football. Some of the guys that didn't get a chance either to play in the Arena League, the Canadian Football League, the National Football League, but are still very good and very competitive, and over the years you get to see some guys that are pretty doggone good at their trait, and they're not going to knock anyone over. It's not about tackling; it's about skill. It's kind of controlled 7-on-7, and in an environment where you can excel and be, there'll be a champion named at the end. So, all in good fun. All in a good cause. And what more can you ask for? And it's been a wonderful job. It's great that I could have an opportunity to help an old friend and someone that has a passion still for the game, as we all witnessed each Sunday when we watched and reminisced about our great days that have long passed us.
Well, it sounds like a great combination: food, football, friends, fun, and helping a great cause. Now, what's the name of the organization again?
FlagFest 2014, More Hope Foundation.
More Hope Foundation. All right, Marcus, Mark Rippon, former quarterback of the Washington Redskins. Mark, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you out there slinging the football around.
Well, you won't be seeing me swinging it much anymore, but I'll be out there honoring the guys that are going to do it and having a little fun with them. Just great. Happy holidays to you too, Stephen, and all your podcast crew and everyone during the holiday season.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mark. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye.
So that was Mark Rippon, former quarterback of the Washington Redskins, former Super Bowl MVP, all-around good guy. I'm very excited that I'm going to be able to work with the organization that he is going to be a part of, this Flag Football Festival out here in Pasadena, California. Thanks, Mark, for coming on the show. I'm going to keep the show moving, so let's get to it. Joining me all the way from York, just north of England, is a good pal, friend of the show from Sky Sports News, Richard Graves. What's up, buddy?
Hi, Steve. Great to see you again. Great to chat. First of all, for your UK listeners, I'm going to have to put you right. York is in the north of England, not just north of England, because that would put York in Scotland, and that might upset a few people.
Thank you for correcting me then. So it's in the north of England.
It's in the north of England.
It's still England, just in the northern part of England.
Exactly.
All right, so how far away is York, say, from London?
Probably around 200 miles. In American terms, you guys would say, well, it's only a 3.5-hour drive, so it's nothing. Trust me, over here, it's a long way.
So it's a long way. So basically, you're like, so if I'm here in Pasadena and Las Vegas, you're like Baker. You're Barstow. You're, oh my God, you're the Barstow of to London. That's what you are.
What is Barstow?
See, folks in the States know exactly what that means. Everybody, you're right. Over there in the UK, they're saying, what is Barstow? It's this little podunk town about 200 miles from Pasadena that you just drive by on your way to Las Vegas.
Well, we're not a little town. York's a city. Here's a historical fact.
Do you have buildings and everything? You're not like out in the forest and stuff.
There are castle walls around the outskirts of York. Back in centuries ago, for a short time, York was the capital of England.
Wow. So basically, next year, if I come back to London, I need to come out and experience York then. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, you do. All you've ever done is come to London. I keep telling you, you need to come up to Yorkshire.
Well, this past
the countryside.
To be fair, this past year, I experienced English life. I mean, I was outside of London.
Now, hang on. Let's just hold the horses right there.
Right.
You stayed just outside of London in Colchester.
Yes.
But the only countryside you saw between London and Colchester was on the inside of a tube train, wasn't it?
No. No. The train that I took from Colchester to central London was above ground. So I saw the fields, beautiful stuff. And when
You told me you fell asleep on it.
Well, I did. But that's only once. I mean, I did this multiple days. Come on. It was only once. I fell asleep once. It's beautiful. It was beautiful out there. And Jeremy Parker, I know you're listening. Beautiful home out in the countryside. It was very nice and so green. I loved it. It was amazing. I need to stay longer.
Are they still alive after the firework display?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. The Guy Fawkes night. Yes. Good stuff. All right, buddy, before we get into the games, we differ. And let's just tell the fans, shall we, that are listening, how many games do I have picked correctly more than you this season?
I don't want to talk about this.
Let's talk about it.
I'm amazed you've brought me back onto the show for anything other than gloating after my performance two or 3 weeks ago.
No, I'm not gloating. Well, that was a pretty poor performance, buddy. I'm not trying to gloat, but you did. I decided I'm going to bring a professional in to help the fans out. They needed to catch me, and you kind of let them down a little bit.
I bombed. Flat out, I bombed. And I just hang my head in shame. If you can see me now, I'm shaking my head.
I am watching him through the camera, folks. He is shaking and hanging his head in shame. That's all right, buddy. I'm going to give you a chance to make it up here. Your picks aren't actually going up against mine. There is another fans that are going up against. But we have four games that we differ on this week. So let's talk about those. But before we do, I got to ask you, the Cleveland Browns, they announced today they decided to go with Brian Hoyer to start instead of Johnny Football, the guy who gave him a spark, who his teammates said once he was in the game, the offense came to life. They decided Brian Hoyer is the guy. Did they make a mistake?
Well, I've got to tell you, when I heard the news this afternoon that Mike Pettine had said we're sticking with Brian Hoyer for this game on Sunday, I was surprised. You look at Brian Hoyer, and I think in the last four games, his numbers are horrific. Five interceptions, just one touchdown thrown in those four games. And you look at the way he played on Sunday as well. He gave nothing to the Cleveland Browns. They led, I think, 3-0 at the halftime break. And he just couldn't get that offense firing at all, despite how well the Browns were playing on the defensive side of the ball. So you saw them turn to Johnny Manziel for the first time really this season. The opening drive, he leads them 80 yards downfield, finishes with a 10-yard scramble for a touchdown, and you saw a spark. Now, okay, on the next drive, the ensuing drive, we saw the flip side of Johnny Manziel when he very nearly gave away a safety by holding onto the ball too long and not getting rid of it when he was under pressure. But at this stage of the season, I really find it hard to see how the Cleveland Browns, given that they're up against it with the tiebreakers in the AFC North, get into the playoffs, even for a wild card spot. Brian Hoyer, this is the thing as well. Since Josh Gordon came back, his numbers in the last two games have actually got worse.
Because he started forcing the ball to Gordon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if I'd been a part of the Cleveland Browns organization, I'd have pulled the trigger and gone with Johnny Manziel. Because I think Brian Hoyer this afternoon has admitted as much. He knows there's every chance that he will hear the boo birds out in this game against Indianapolis on Sunday. So if things don't go their way, there's no way that the Cleveland Browns get through 60 minutes of football this Sunday without at some point having Johnny Manziel back under center.
Yeah. So what do you make of the situation there in Cleveland? They've got four games left in the year. They pretty much need to win all four games to have a shot at the playoffs. Short of that, they're not getting in. Why not? Let's see what we have in Johnny Manziel. Is he going to be the face of our franchise going forward? Because Brian Hoyer proved he's probably not it. So why not make the move now?
Well, no, I completely agree with you. It was interesting to read that their tackle, Joe Thomas, came out heavily in favor of Brian Hoyer, saying he's the guy that's got us here to this stage this season. And if we made the switch now to the rookie, he felt that would be throwing the towel in. But look at the AFC as it is anyway, Steve. And with what you've got going on in the AFC West, with the Dolphins and Bills going well in the AFC East as well, they don't have the tiebreaker. That's before you even look at their own division with the Ravens and the Steelers. Fine, they both lost as well last weekend. But with the Bengals winning, that's now a game and a half lead that they have over the Browns and the tiebreaker on top of that. There's only four games in the regular season remaining. It would almost have to be a minor miracle of results for Cleveland to get into the postseason right now, just because of the way it all sets up. So I would go with Johnny Manziel because you've got something to build on. You've got four games at this point where you can look at Johnny Manziel and see how he's come along already in his rookie season and what needs sharpening up for next year, what he does well already this year. I don't care what anybody says, there is no substitute for competitive in-game experience. And this is an opportunity for the Cleveland Browns. I see why they're hanging on with a 7-5 record. It's this slim hope of making the postseason, but I think it's a mistake.
All right. Well, there you go. That's you and me on the same page, buddy. We both feel that it's time maybe to make a move. You're right. Just looking at, you know, you got the Chargers and Chiefs up there. You've got all the teams in the North, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Steelers, and, of course, the Browns. You've got the Colts really being the only team. I mean, the Houston Texans out of the South, they can make a push if they win out. But then in the West, San Diego, Kansas City, Denver, there's just far too many teams in the AFC.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to pass by all of those teams. So maybe you see if this guy – because my belief is you don't learn all that well sitting and watching from the sideline. You got to get into the fire. You got to see how fast these guys move. And so that's it's going to be very interesting, especially look, they're losing this game. They're not you and I, this is not one of the games we're talking about. You and I both agree Indianapolis is winning the game.
Hey, look, the Cleveland Browns have played well defensively this year, but they're now going up against the number one ranked offense, the number one scoring team in the NFL. Andrew Luck has shown that he can whiz that ball around to any number of receivers and get touchdowns. Bottom line is, the Browns can't score points on offense. There is no way they win this game.
Right, so there you go. That means that I fully expect, if they lose this game, Johnny Manziel comes out and finishes the season.
I think without a doubt. I'll go one step further, as I said just a few moments ago. I expect Johnny Manziel to finish this game on Sunday and then have the final three games to go ahead and see how he's progressed in the rest of the year. Because, look, don't get me wrong. I think what the Cleveland Browns organization has done with Manziel this year has been good. Start him sitting on the sidelines so he can learn and see what's going on. But now's the time, I think, for him to be put into an in-game situation. He's chomping at the bit. He said this afternoon that he's disappointed. He clearly thought he was going to get the nod today from the head coach, Mike Pettin. He hasn't. He's a man with a point to prove. And I think more than that, everyone in terms of the fans around Cleveland wants to see what they've got with their first-round pick.
Johnny Football, baby. Let's put him in there. Okay, buddy. Four games that we differ upon. I know why we differ on these four games, but let's talk about them. We'll start in Miami, where the Miami Dolphins host the Baltimore Ravens. If the season ended today, all right, thankfully it's not ending today, but if it did, the Miami Dolphins would actually be in the playoffs. This is the number six seed.
Yes, they would.
So here come the Baltimore Ravens, the team that would be on the outside looking in. Ravens at Miami, who do you got?
Honestly, I don't think there's anything at all to choose between these two teams. They've both got a 7-5 record. They've both had really good, strong, high moments this year. They've also had, like we saw with Baltimore last weekend, moments they'd desperately like to forget. Let's not forget, Baltimore is an organization which has built a reputation. It's won two Super Bowls on the back of a vaunted defense. That's not quite there this year. They blew a 10-point lead inside the final 6 minutes last Sunday at home to the San Diego Chargers, who I will go on record right now as saying I did not think the Chargers had it in them to go across country and win a game in Baltimore. So credit to them. Now you come down to this game, it's all on the line for me. I think at this stage of the season, we've spoken about the other teams in the AFC West, the battle in the AFC North as well. There are a lot of teams that are only just on the outside looking in. So if either of these two teams slip up, then they will be the ones come this time next week on the outside looking in. I think Miami, defensively, are very strong. I think we saw again from Ryan Tannehill on Monday Night Football against the New York Jets. He's still not the finished article. In a game where really he should have taken it by the scruff of the neck and been able to march the Miami Dolphins up and down the field, he was errant with his throws. He was missing open receivers. That's a real concern for me. So in a big game situation, I'm now looking for what's the difference between these two sides. the Baltimore Ravens have the guys that have been there and won the big game. And on that basis, I'm going to say I go with the Ravens this Sunday.
All right. I was sort of thinking that that's where you'd go. I've got the Miami Dolphins only because I've been high on them all year. And here they are at home. They've been great at home. They've been really good at home. And this is their test. This is the one where it may make me jump off the bandwagon. I don't think so. I think that they take care of business. I think with the Miami Dolphins, what I'm finding, which kind of scares me a little bit, is they play to the level of their opponent. They play a really good team. They come out and they play really tough. They play a bad team, like we saw this past week, the Jets on Monday Night Football, and they play down to the level of the Jets. I think they rise up to the challenge. They come out. They play hard against the Baltimore Ravens. I think they take care of them. I think they're going to put pressure on Flacco, the kind of pressure that Flacco hasn't seen yet and that, quite frankly, Flacco shies away from. So that's why I like the Miami Dolphins in this one. Plus, you know, one thing that you've been able to do against the Baltimore Ravens is run the football. I think the combination of Miller and now they've got Thomas going again, I think they're going to be able to do better offensively than they did against the Jets. And they're going to surprise the Ravens. They're going to surprise a lot of people. And, oh, by the way, when we get to another game that we differ on, they're going to come creeping on up on a certain team, and you're going to start to be like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, look at this. They're one game back. You watch.
Well, we'll talk about that when we get to the New England Patriots a little bit later. But for me, if the Miami Dolphins are going to win this game, they've got one big, huge advantage in their favor. That's the fact that this game is being played down in Florida, in Miami, not in the cold up in Baltimore. However, they do have to get pressure on Joe Flacco, make him feel uncomfortable in the pocket, get him moving around, forcing the ball to his receivers. And then on the other side of the ball, if the Dolphins are to win on Sunday, players like Ryan Tannehill, like Mike Wallace, they've got to stand up and be counted. You cannot see Ryan Tannehill missing wide open receivers on what should be a fairly straightforward pass. And equally, Mike Wallace has got to get himself open and he's got to catch the balls that come this way. They do both of those things, and I think they stand a really good chance of winning this game. However, if they don't play as well as they can do, if they don't do those sort of things, then I think we shall see Joe Flacco, Steve Smith, those type of players, Justin Forsett running the ball as well. I think we see the experience of the Baltimore Ravens take over in this game, and I think they then make the Dolphins pay. Let's not dress this game up in any other way than what it actually is. Both teams are 7-5. It is a must-win game for both of these teams if they harbor real ambitions of making the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely right. They have all of these teams, Steelers, Ravens, Bills, Chiefs, Dolphins, all at 7-5. You cannot slip up. You have your five losses. Six losses isn't going to be good enough to get you into the dance. I think I like the Miami Dolphins. I've been with them all year. I think they will surprise some people. And I think, as you said, they will get after Joe Flacco and prove to be the winner. So there you go. First game that we differ upon. Let's move on to Tennessee, where the Tennessee Titans host the New York Giants. Now, I'm going to go first and tell you why I like the Tennessee Titans in this game. Because the Tennessee Titans have been bad. Why on earth would I take Tennessee to win a football game? The New York Giants.
Why? Why would you?
The New York Giants showed me last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have packed it in. They've got it. These are all U-Haul games for him. Remember, Deion Sanders used to say it's a U-Haul game where they've packed all their stuff in their U-Hauls and they're ready to go home and have fun in the offseason. That's where the Giants are. Nobody trusts Eli Manning anymore because he's either going to fumble the ball away or he's going to throw the ball away to the other team. And the Tennessee Titans, for as bad as they've been pretty competitive in most of their games. They very rarely get blown out. Just like Jacksonville showed last week, if you keep coming at the Giants, I mean, the Giants had a 21-0 lead for crying out loud. They kept coming. They kept chipping away, and they wound up winning that football game. Tennessee's at home. I think they do it, and Eli and the Giants will lose again.
Wow. Well, straight off the bat, I'm going to tell you, this is a horrible game. It is awful. Two really, really bad teams. I do a weekly blog over here in the UK for Sky Sports NFL website. And going into last week's game for the Giants against the Jaguars, I tried to give Giants fans some reason for hope, pointing out that on their six-game losing streak, they'd lost to the Cowboys twice, they'd lost to the Eagles, the Seahawks, good teams with winning records. And therefore, on that basis, I felt that the Giants weren't getting blown away by these teams. You know, they lost by only 6 points to the San Francisco 49ers a few weeks ago. And therefore, they'd go into Jacksonville and they'd do a number on the Jags. Well, the first half went according to the script. The second half, I've got to tell you, Eli Manning and the New York Giants as a team were awful. I said at halftime to a colleague I know who's a Giants fan who was feeling pretty smug, as long as you don't put the ball in Eli's hands, you're home and hosed. What do we see? Manning's trying to throw the ball. He gets sacked, fumbles it into the end zone, recovered by the Jags. Then there's another turnover that's taken the distance as well, and it all came crashing down around them. Having said that, look at who they're up against this weekend. The Tennessee Titans, man. They cannot get out of their own way. Two wins all season. It's been a tragedy down in Tennessee. When you think of all the off-season moves they made in free agency, trying to shore up their offensive line, bringing over Michael Orr from the Baltimore Ravens, and it just has not worked for them. They've turned to Zach Mettenberger, their rookie quarterback. He got knocked out of the game by J.J. Watt last weekend. In comes Jake Locker, immediately gets intercepted. They're struggling, and they pretty much, like the Giants, probably can't wait for the season to end. But the bottom line is the Giants have got three wins this year to the Titans two. The Giants also have Odell Beckham Jr., who is a game breaker, a match winner. And on that basis, I emphasize two bad teams. That is the difference, and that is why I go with the New York Giants.
I see. I see. You're right. Odell Beckham Jr. is causing a lot of people problems on the defensive side of the ball. But he's not enough. And I think that the Tennessee Titans, they do manage to get pressure on the quarterback. That's when Eli struggles. That's when Eli becomes, as I call, happy feet. And he starts to dance around a little too much. That's when he has problems. And that's why I'm going to go out on a limb. Got to pick some upsets. And I'm taking the Tennessee Titans to upset the New York Giants.
Have you seen the Titans' record this year, Steve? Take week one aside, when they went up to Kansas City and stunned the Chiefs, the only team they've beaten has been on the road against the Washington Redskins.
This is the New York Giants. The Giants are like the Redskins. They're another NFC East opponent that they will take care of. So, yeah.
Man, I cannot believe that the Giants will play so badly 2 weeks running and lose in tennis. I just cannot buy that the Tom Coughlin
side. They packed it up. U-Haul.
Again.
U-Haul games.
So we shall see on Sunday. I cannot argue because I'm 11, 12 games behind you. And the last time I argued, it didn't turn out so well for me.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyways, 12. Where's the blog? I know it's, you can go. I went to skysports.com and I was able to find it on the NFL section. But do you have like an actual link that you can give out?
There is a link. You can go to my Twitter account and I shall post it on there for you. Richard Graves 1. And then you can read a preview of all 16 games every week.
Yeah, I've actually got it up right now. I like what you have to say about the Cowboys-Bears game on Thursday Night Football. That's coming up shortly.
There's another huge game, by the way.
All right, another huge game that we have that we differ on, and this one has playoff implications. The Kansas City Chiefs going on the road into the desert to face the Arizona Cardinals. You got Arizona, and I'm kind of curious as to find out why, because back-to-back weeks, they have not looked so good. What do you got?
This is a tough, tough game to call, I've got to tell you. And it comes down to what are the little things between these two teams that could possibly decide it. Because Drew Stanton, you remember when we spoke 2 or 3 weeks ago and I took the Detroit Lions going into Arizona and highlighted Drew Stanton as being a real problem for the Arizona Cardinals. You told me at the time, no, no, Stanton's good. I'm happy with them. Well, look at what's happened in the last 2 weeks. He has been dreadful. And to go to Atlanta, who's a team that, again, has struggled to get out of its own way this year, and lose a game pretty much everybody had already chalked up as Arizona's 10th win on the year. That all sorts of red flags are flying around for me with the Cardinals. But now look at who they're coming up against, the Kansas City Chiefs. Do you realize, Steve, the Chiefs haven't thrown a single touchdown this season to a wide receiver, not one. And therein lies a big problem against an Arizona Cardinals side who absolutely stuffed the run.
Yeah, the problem is that I think that the Arizona Cardinals are on a downward spiral, and it's a spiral that cannot be stopped. They've now got it in their head, oh, man, you know, we really miss Carson Palmer a lot more than we thought we were going to, and they're struggling offensively. One thing that we know about this league, you have to put up points. You can't rely on your defense to win it all for you, and their defense is really good, but the Kansas City Chiefs, they have an offense that knows how to put up points. Yeah, they're not doing it with the wide receivers. I mean, Dwayne Bowe, Jamal Charles, Anthony Fasano, Travis Kelce, the tight ends. They're more tight ends, running backs out of the backfield. The only wide receiver that has had significant amount of targets is Dwayne Bowe. He has 46 catches for like 550 yards, something like that, 550-plus yards. He's the only one that of significance as a wide receiver. There is no wide receiver threat. But when you can run the football, I mean, Jamal Charles is over 800 yards on the season, and Niles Davis has over 420 yards. So together, they've put up 1,200 yards on the ground plus. And I think that that is something that they can use to attack the Arizona Cardinals defense. Then on the flip side, you're not going to have to put up that many points because Arizona's struggling right now on the offensive side of the ball. They will continue to put pressure on Drew Stanton. He's got to make better decisions, and he's not making better decisions right now. I think that the Cardinals have stalled, downward spiral, and I like Kansas City. They know they have to keep winning. Once again, they're a part of that 7-5 crew. They have to keep winning. They'll find a way to win this one.
Okay, let me go on the record by making a bold prediction right now.
Bold prediction.
If the Arizona Cardinals get 17 points this Sunday, they win this game. And I'll tell you why. It's because Kansas City Chiefs' whole offense is predicated on running the football. They average 129 yards on the ground per game. Well, here's the kicker. The Arizona Cardinals' defense are the sixth best defense in the league at stopping the run. So if they turn this into a one-dimensional game and force the Chiefs into the air, the Chiefs' offense is that bad, they rank 31st in the passing game. You can look at all the figures you like and say, well, the Cardinals' pass defense hasn't been great. That's because they've turned teams into a one-dimensional team. We've already said the Chiefs haven't got a single touchdown to their wide receivers, and I don't see any way the receiving core for the Kansas City Chiefs is able to beat the likes of Patrick Peterson and co. in that secondary for the Arizona Cardinals. So if the Cardinals can put up 17 points, they win this game in the desert.
Well, I'll give you one more stat line that I think kind of leans towards the Kansas City Chiefs. It's points per game. Even without throwing a touchdown to a wide receiver, they're averaging over 23 points per game. Meanwhile, Arizona's only averaging a little over 20 points per game. That doesn't bode well for the Cardinals. I think the Kansas City Chiefs, even with their just running the ball, they will find a way to score enough points to win the game.
I'll give you one more example that I feel backs up my argument for this, Steve. Look, 2 weeks ago, Thursday night football, the Oakland Raiders stuffed the run for much of the game, and look what happened to the Chiefs. The Raiders, who are 1-11 on the season now, got their only win against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think we've seen the Chiefs play hard, but I've also think in recent times we've seen how you can beat this side. And I think going to the desert, everything favors the Cardinals, even with Drew Stanton under center. And I'll tell you something else as well. Think about this, having been 9-1 this season, if the Cardinals lose this game at the weekend, they may well, in my opinion, not make the postseason. And wouldn't that be a turnaround?
Yeah, I'm actually already starting to lean on that bandwagon that the Arizona Cardinals, as well as they started, they're in danger of missing the postseason, and it's going to be sad. I feel bad for Bruce Arians and that organization, but we see it time and time again. The starting quarterback goes down, and with it goes your season. The only exception to that rule, Kurt Warner and the St. Louis Rams. Trent Green goes down, and Warner comes in and has a phenomenal season. You don't see it that often.
No, you don't. And you heard Bruce Arians, who's a much-respected head coach around the league, you put up a few red flags following that defeat in Atlanta last weekend. First of all, he tried to take the spotlight off his team's performance by saying, look, this defeat is on me. I feel that I sent a team out that wasn't ready to play. And then he also called out his star cornerback, Patrick Peterson, who'd been talking a bit of trash about his matchup against Julio Jones at the weekend. And Julio Jones, of course, had a big day. Scored his first touchdown since week three in the NFL right. this year. Went over 100 receiving yards. And Arians said, look, if you're going to talk trash, then you need to back it up on the field. And I think that sort of thing is designed to fire up his team and get a response this weekend. It's a response they absolutely have to have.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. That is certainly one that I will be watching. Fourth and final game that we differ on. I'm going to let you start it because the minute I say which teams, everybody's going to know who I'm picking. So I'm going to let you go. It's the New England Patriots coming across the country to face the San Diego Chargers. And all I've got to say is San Diego Superchargers. Who do you got?
Look, I don't have the Chargers, if for no other reason than to stop you singing. Nobody wants to hear that. I've got to tell you, I was driving along in the car last week, listening to your podcast, and I heard you say you were taking the Chargers in Baltimore, and I had to stop the car. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But what do you know? They're 10 points down in the final 6 minutes. Phillip Rivers leads two drives, not just finishing with a field goal, but a game-winning touchdown! To win the game by a point. I was like, wow, I can't believe what I'm seeing with my own eyes here. So credit to you, Steve. I'll go on ahead and say that. And credit to the Chargers, because again, a bit like what we've been talking about with other teams going into this week, I genuinely felt if the Chargers lost that game in Baltimore, then I couldn't see any way in which they managed to pick themselves up, dust themselves down, and get back into the playoff race. As it is, they're very much in it, and that's what sets up this game against the New England Patriots.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that the San Diego Chargers went into that game, and the way they rallied at the end to win it kind of gave them that little boost to go in and be like, you know what? It's playoff mode, baby. They are now in playoff mode. They know they're going to have to win out pretty much. Maybe they can sneak in winning three out of their last four. But for all intents and purposes, they know it's a win or go home kind of situation. I know it's the big, bad New England Patriots coming to town. But the Patriots are coming all the way across the country. And there's precedent for this pick. The San Diego Chargers have defeated Tom Brady and Belichick. They know how to do it. They're not afraid of this football team. I think they get after the quarterback. They get after Tom Brady. And even if the San Diego Chargers fall down early in this football game, I think they still have enough in them to come back. They will not fold. This is not going to be a 20-point blowout by the Patriots. It's going to be a close game, and I think San Diego finds a way to win it in the end.
You're right. There is a precedent, and over the last few years, the San Diego Chargers have given the New England Patriots all they can handle, and on some occasions, more than they can handle. However, when was the last time, at this stage of the year, you saw a Bill Belichick side lose two in a row? It just does not happen. So here come the New England Patriots off the back of what was a very disappointing defeat for them in Lambeau Field last weekend, albeit I thought it was a terrific game, and I would not be surprised if we see a potential rematch in Super Bowl 49 in Arizona next February, although we're looking down the road there before you jump in. But here we go. It's this for San Diego to win this game, they're going to have to put points on the board. The New England Patriots averaged 31 points per game. Even Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers couldn't make it to that total last week. The Chargers' defense as good.
They held the Patriots to 21 points. 21 points.
What was that?
The Packers didn't have to get to that point because they held the Patriots to 21.
Which is what I was getting onto. The Chargers' defense isn't as good. Their offense certainly isn't as good as the Green Bay Packers. And the New England Patriots' defense, I've said this before on this podcast. I'll say it again. I think the Patriots' defense is sneaky good and getting better and more impressive with every week that goes on. And I'm sorry for the Charger fans that are listening to this game, but there is no way, there's no way they match Tom Brady and the New England Patriots for point for point in this game. I'm sorry, Charger fans that are listening, the New England Patriots win this game and potentially deal a severe blow to the San Diego Chargers and their playoff hopes.
San Diego Super
stop
Chargers!
It. It.
I'm not going to stop it because let me tell you, I believe in Philip Rivers. Okay.
Oh man.
They are,
you are going
to
apologize to me on Monday morning.
Wait a minute. Hold on 1 second. Do I need to pull out my phone? Where I get, as a matter of fact, I am going to pull out my phone, folks. I am pulling out my phone to get. Let's see. Where is the text that I get from my buddy Richard Graves? Oh, unfortunately, it's the phone that we're Skyping on, so I'm not going to be able to. But here's the gist of it.
That is,
I get a text.
I'm distraught.
I get a text from my buddy Richard Graves after he listens to last week's podcast where I was on with Nacho. And he says, ha ha, I'm picking up 3 games on you, buddy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, we differ on Ravens Chargers. I've got the Ravens. He's like, we differ on Patriots Packers. I've got the Patriots. And we differ on, I don't even know what the other game was. How many of those 3 games we differed on did you get right?
Do you know, for every organization, every individual to have a successful season, go all the way and win it all, you occasionally need the rub of the green. And I've just got to hold up my hands and say, this season, I have been downright unlucky. Everything that could go against me has done. It's been a conspiracy, and I think you've had something to do with it.
That's right. I've conspired with all 32 teams to make sure that the lucky bounces of the balls go not your way and go against you. That's what I have done. Buddy, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on the show again. Another brilliant 35-plus minutes. But check this out, Richard. I'm going to get some emails from some New England Patriots fans. I know it. But the San Diego Chargers will win. And when they do, when I get these 4 games that we differ on and I get those right and you do not, my friend, the Miami Dolphins will be 1 game from first place, just behind the New England Patriots. And having already beaten the Patriots once, their game coming up in Foxborough is going to decide the division, baby. I can't wait. I can't wait for this to happen. And you're going to be like, no, how did it happen? They were 9-2. They had a huge lead. How did they lose the lead for the division? You heard it here first, my friend. Miami will win the division.
Do you know what? 3.5 weeks from now, my plane touches down in Los Angeles, and I will see you walking out of the terminal doing this.
Is that the Johnny Manziel sign?
It's the Johnny Manziel money sign, baby.
Yes.
You'll be handing over cold, hard cash when your Miami Dolphins come second best to the New England Patriots in the AFC East.
I'll pay my debt, but I think that there will be nothing to be paid because it's going to be good. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot, bud.
Anytime. I love it.
Always good fun to have Richard Graves on the show. He really knows his football, and I am happy that I get to work with him from time to time with Sky Sports News. Okay, so I can quickly get through all the rest of the games that Richard and I agreed upon. Obviously, Thursday night football, the Dallas Cowboys travel to Chicago to face the Bears. We both have Dallas winning that game, as does Peter Kinberg. So just remember, in all of these games, myself, Richard Graves, and Peter Kinberg, the fan representative, all agree on these games. The Indianapolis Colts at Cleveland Browns, we agree the Indianapolis Colts will win this game. I myself personally would say if Johnny Manziel got the start, I would have gone with Cleveland. But without Johnny Football at the helm, They're keeping Brian Hoyer there. I'm not sure that it's going to be enough to beat the Indianapolis Colts. Tampa Bay at Detroit. We all have the Lions. Lions got back to the winning ways against Chicago on Thanksgiving. Here comes Tampa Bay, a team that hasn't been doing very, very good. They've struggled both offensively and defensively. We'll take the Lions. The Houston Texans travel to Jacksonville to face the Jacksonville Jags. And although the Jaguars came back to nip the New York Giants at the end to get the win, it won't be enough against division rival Houston, and the Houston Texans should improve to 7-6. The New York Jets traveling to Minnesota. We all like the Vikings to win at home. The New York Jets and Rex Ryan, they just want to finish the season out. I know Rex is really disappointed. He said as much that the team is 2-10. I don't see them winning very many football games as the season ends and winds up. The Carolina Panthers and New Orleans Saints, we all have got New Orleans to get back to winning ways at home. They've lost their last three home games, but with division foe Carolina, a team that they've already handled quite nicely in Carolina, they should win that game again. The St. Louis Rams traveled to Washington to face the Washington Redskins. Mark Rippon was on earlier in the show, and as he said, the Redskins are finding a hard time putting a competitive team on the field. We all like the Rams to win in that game. The Buffalo Bills travel to Denver to face the Denver Broncos. If this game were in Buffalo, I might lean towards the Buffalo Bills, but at Mile High, I'm not sure that defense is going to be enough to get after Peyton Manning. We all like the Denver Broncos to win at home. The San Francisco 49ers travel to Oakland to face the Oakland Raiders. We've all got the 49ers. Yeah, the Oakland Raiders were humiliated last week at the hands of the St. Louis Rams, 52-0. Yeah, the 49ers aren't going to put up that many points, but they will get the win nonetheless. The Seattle Seahawks, defending Super Bowl champions, traveled to Philadelphia to face the Eagles. We all like Seattle to go in there and get back to the top of their division by beating the Philadelphia Eagles. And finally, Monday Night Football, where the Atlanta Falcons face the Green Bay Packers. We all like Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers to continue to roll, and they will put a stop to the Atlanta Falcons before they can get on a winning streak. So with that being said, those are all the games, the two games that we differ on. Peter and I, Pittsburgh at Cincinnati, he's got the Steelers. Well, I've got the home Bengals and the New York Giants at Tennessee Titans. He is sticking with Eli, while I like Tennessee to get their third win of the season. All right, so it's up to Peter to get back to us and call the challenge game. Hopefully I will have that up on the website before Sunday's game. All right, we're almost done with the show here. But before I let you go, I got to bring in my personal MVP at the wide receiver position, a guy that was my wide receiver when I played in the Flag Football League, and I got to throw him a lot of touchdowns. Let's bring him in. All right. Joining me now, my wide receiver, the face and the voice of the More Hope Foundation and Flag Fest 2014, Dave Schmidt. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's happening, Steve Miranda? My quarterback. Every time you drop back, it was a Miranda warning that they needed to watch their rights.
That's right, man. It's Dave and I played flag football together for 1 year. How many touchdowns did you score that year?
It had to be like 28 to 30.
Yeah, because I threw almost 50 touchdown passes that year. That season. 10 games,
yep.
50 touchdowns. That's like five a game. And there was one where you had all five.
I think there was. I think there was. And that makes Brady and Manning and those guys look like, you know, yesterday's news the way you were playing in those games, man.
Of course, we didn't have pads on and no one was trying to tackle me, but.
Well, yeah, I do catch the ball a little easier with nobody chasing me too hard, you know, nobody trying to knock my teeth out or whatever.
All right, Dave, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. I'm excited about this Flag Fest 2014, flag football, music festival, food, fun, all in one location. Tell people what's it all about, what's it for, and how do you get involved?
All right. Well, I got involved because I've been playing flag football, you know, basically since I moved to California when I was very young. We'll just leave it at that. my good friend Ed Blunt runs the flag football league that I used to play in here in Pasadena, California, and that's where we're having this big Flag Fest 2014, which is really taking a couple things that are really important to a lot of us. I mean, you know what it's like all weekend during football season. That's an obsession. And it goes across the board. There's plenty of us that are still living those dreams of high school days of yore, you know, kind of thing. And we're still getting out there, and we're trying our best and giving it everything we got and telling stories in the office on Monday morning. So we're taking that passion that, you know, runs rampant in the U.S.
Absolutely.
And we're applying something that's very passionate to a lot of us, especially this time of year, which is the More Hope Foundation. That foundation is it's based on a friend of Ed's, Dee Dee Moore, who passed too soon back in 2005 from ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, as you know. And so since then, you know, Ed has put together the More Hope Foundation, which is really about giving a little more back, getting a few more opportunities for the inner city youth through being active, getting them active in sports like youth football and things like that. But also, you know, this time of year, we're charitable. So, you know, while Flag Fest is going to be a lot of fun as a player and as a spectator, ultimately, you know, we're doing good.
Right.
And that's what we all really want to be doing here.
So the funds that are generated from the Flag Football Festival goes back to the More Hope Foundation.
To the More Hope Foundation, that's right. We're also doing a toy and canned food drive. The toy drive is going to be going to the Children's Hospital. So we have, you know, a bunch of kids that are in need, that are, you know, having a tough time right now, that we'll get to put some smiles on their faces this time of year. You know, with the More Hope Foundation, again, that's just money we put back into this program so that we can do more for these kids and get them connected to things that are actually going to benefit them later in life. Get them in the right crowd, staying in shape, you know, hanging out with the positive influence that sports has been on so many of us.
And how do individuals who want to play or make a donation to the foundation or play in the flag football tournament, how would they go about contacting you guys and joining in on the fun?
We have the morehopefoundation.org is our website. That's more as in the last name, M-O-O-R-E, not M-O-R or M-O-O-R, however you spell it.
Yeah.
You know, M-O-O-R-E, hopefoundation.org is our website. You can go on there. You can email us at info at the More Hope Foundation, and we'll give you all that information.
Awesome. That sounds good, because I think this time of year, it's the holidays. Football, obviously, is great. You know, the NFL's ramping up, getting ready to go into the playoffs. And the holidays are ramping up, so you've got all of that going into this festival. And it's in Pasadena, California. How big do you expect it to be?
Well, they're going to be doing a parade in a few years about this. That's how big I expect it to be. Now, we really want this to be a big event, and it's not just about the teams and the players coming out. This is going to be a weekend of entertainment for the whole family. So we will have music in between games. We'll have very competitive football games that you'll be happy to be a spectator at. We have, you know, food that's coming out there. We'll be donating food. We partner with the city of Pasadena, actually. They'll be the ones actually making the food boxes out of the food that we get donations with. We already mentioned the toy drive that we're doing.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be no downtime. We have great entertainment slated. We have dancing. We have singing. We're expecting the fans to get involved. It's just going to be a day like nothing you've ever seen at a football game
before. And how many teams are going to get together and participate in these tournaments?
There'll be a total of 32 teams covering all different age brackets. That's 13 and under. That's one division. 18 and under, so high school kids, is another division. We're having the military celebrity division, as well as the recreational elite division. So it's going to be pretty exciting with those four categories, and everybody will get their moment in the spotlight in that championship game, provided they make it.
Yeah, and my understanding is, in your leagues, there's been some professional football players that come out and played in those leagues, right?
Oh, yeah, there have. The one that comes to mind, just because I tried to catch a couple of his passes, Todd Marinovich came out, you know, a little while back, and he played. Hell, Eddie, who started this whole thing, played a little pro football himself.
I
understand you spoke with Mark, who's going to be out, Rip, you know?
Yep.
He'll be out there as well, and it'll be interesting to see who else we have out there. You know, I don't want to give away all our surprises, but it's going to be a day full of celebrity and fun.
I like to hear that. I told Mark Rippon when he was on, I may have to polish off the cleats and get back out there and start throwing the football again.
Well, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to have to do the same thing. In fact, I probably have to go out and buy a new set of cleats because I'm not sure where mine are. But if you're slinging, then I'm your man, man. I'll be out there catching them for you.
Sounds good. Dave Schmidt, the face and the voice of FlagFest 2014 and the More Hope Foundation. You can find them at morehopefoundation.org. That's MOOREHOPE foundation.org. All right, Dave. Thank you for stopping by. And I guess the next time you and I, we get together, we're actually going to be announcing the games at this Flag Festival tournament, correct?
That's right. The championship games on December 21st. That's the Sunday, about 2 weeks away from now. You and I are going to be out there teaming up once again.
All right. I like that. We were a great team, and we're probably going to make a great announcing team as well.
I'm sure we will.
So there you have it. I'd like to thank Mark Rippon, Dave Schmidt, Richard Graves for joining me in this podcast today. Good stuff coming up. There's some announcements that I'll be able to get to make later on in the next several weeks. But this Flag Football Festival is going to be really cool. If you are in the LA area, please come out and join us. It'll be a lot of fun. Bring a team. If you're not in the Pasadena, Los Angeles area, go out to the website, morehopefoundation.org. Check it out. Please be generous with your donations. We'd love to see them come in. And if you want to fly in a team to play in the tournament, go out and do that as well. I'll make sure that I use my voice to announce your team, and hopefully it gets all the way to the championship game. Once again, thanks, Mark Rippon and Dave Schmidt and Richard Graves. You guys were great. I'm going to leave you with this. Week 14, it's put up or shut up time. No more excuses. It's time to start winning to put your team into the playoffs. It's going to take probably 11 wins in both the AFC and NFC divisions to get into the playoffs, unless you are in the NFC South, where 6, probably 7 wins will get you into the playoffs because you can win the division with that many wins. Other than that, it's going to take 11 wins to get into the dance. So you got to start winning. You got to start showing up because if you're 7-5, you got to win out just to have a chance. Make sure you check us out on www.nflrnr.com. Find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter handles there. And once again, morehopefoundation.org. Check them out, and I appreciate your time. Thanks for listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Stephen Miranda, and I'm out.